Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Andrea Seabrook in the studios of WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Andrea, it's a pleasure to have you with us while you're out on the road. Ken Rudin is away. But you are actually a working reporter out on the road talking to real Americans about their real lives.
For once, yes. It's great fun. It's just amazing to be outside of Washington. And you know how all the lawmakers, the congressmen, the senators, they say, we need to go home and get in touch with the people? I think it should be mandatory for political reporters, Washington reporters, to go out at least a week a year, if not more, and just be in touch with real people. Because I really feel like this is going to change the way I ask questions of those same lawmakers in Washington when I get back.
I think that's true. I think it probably ought to be closer to a month if we could possibly swing it. But let's make that a note to ourselves for down the road.
Yeah.
The other people who are out on the road, not so much the congressmen. We're not seeing so much of the congressmen this summer, not so many town halls as we used to see for pretty obvious reasons after what happened a couple of years ago. But we do see a lot of people who are running for another office, President of the United States. And just today, Michelle Bachmann, who won the Ames Straw Poll last weekend, was out on the campaign trail telling people that after she's president, gasoline will sell for under $2 a gallon.
How's she going to do that, Ron?
Well, I presume it's by the application of good government principles and a much smaller federal government, and we're going to encourage oil and gas exploration at home, and we're going to lower taxes, and we're particularly going to lower taxes on energy, and everybody...
Because, no, wait, Ron, I thought she had some kind of, like, mind power that would make her lower gas prices in a way that no president has ever been able to do.
Well, I don't want to put that past her because, after all, she is unlike any president we have had heretofore. If she does become president, she will certainly have a lot of mojo behind her at the point that she takes office. Who knows? Maybe everyone will just voluntarily lower the gas prices.
You see my point, though, that, you know, I mean, they always come in saying, well, I'm going to make everything great. And then they get in, they realize the president can't do that much, frankly, about gas prices. It's such an international business. It's got OPEC. It's got, you know, Saudi Arabia. I mean, these are big players in the market that have nothing to do with American politics.
But it is hard to get attention away from Rick Perry this week, which is, I would guess, maybe one of the objectives Michelle Bachmann has in making some of these statements. One of the other things that she's said this week is that she would make it a priority to build every mile, every foot, and every inch of a wall that's been proposed across the entire U.S.-Mexican border to make sure that no more illegal immigration happens. And this is a concept, which at least as it applies to the Texas portion, large Texas portion of that border, Rick Perry has called idiocy. Do you think that her support for the wall has anything to do with Mr. Perry's opposition to that wall?
Very interesting, isn't it?
Well,
it is.
You've got to get attention away from the guy.
That's the thing about Texas governors, though, and it's one of the things about George W. Bush. I mean, if you've been the governor of Texas, you know some immigration policy, and you know the realities of immigration coming up from the southern border, be they people from Mexico or Central America or wherever. And, you know, it just looks so different to people who have spent time there. You remember that, I'm sure, that George W. Bush's immigration policy was downright liberal compared to, you know, the anti-immigration movements and the Tea Party movements we see today. And I think Rick Perry is similar.
Yeah, more or less the rest of the Republican Party thought George W. Bush was too far out on that particular limb. But interestingly, both Bush and Perry got about 40% of the Hispanic vote in their last reelection campaign as governor of Texas. That's a pretty hefty percentage and pretty much guarantees that you're elected governor if you're a Republican in Texas, if you can get that many Hispanic votes. So that is all part of the It's All Politics mix on that issue for both of them.
Yeah.
And Michelle Bachmann comes in from the other side and says, well, you know what? Most of the people that I'm talking to think we should just build a fence and shut this whole business down once and for all.
Right, yeah. Remember, in Texas, one of the interesting things is that a big part of Texas used to be Mexico. So those people who are seen as, you know, by other people in the country as being non-Americans, Hispanics who came up from somewhere, is the border that moved, not the people necessarily.
Does make a difference in that part of the world and some of the other parts of the Southwest as well. You know, if Bush and Perry have in common that they did well among Hispanic voters in Texas, they don't seem to have a lot of other things in common lately, as we have heard an absolute fusillade of criticism against Rick Perry, since he got in the race, from people who used to work for President Bush. We haven't heard from W himself, but we've heard a lot from his
Carl
former
Rove.
Staffers, Michael Gerson, Tony Fratto. Lots of people have
like
come
him,
out.
Huh?
Well, they seem to have some issues with him, and we talked to Michael Gerson about that yesterday. He says, well, it's just the natural rivalry of two people come from largely the same place politically, but also some of the things that Perry has been saying were deeply troubling to Bushies. For example, saying that Ben Bernanke, whom Bush appointed as the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, should be, well, tried for treason.
He just said it would be treasonous if the Fed printed money between.
And of course, the Fed doesn't print money. The Bureau of Engraving and Printing does. But of course, what he meant was if there's another round of stimulus through the monetary policy, QE3, quantitative easing 3, as has been proposed at times, that would tend to goose the economy a little before the election, and that would be treacherous or possibly treasonous. In the formulation of Governor Perry.
He said both, actually.
I don't think he proposed a trial.
Is there a difference between treachery
well, actually,
and treason?
Well, actually, treason is in the statutes as one of those things that people can be executed for in federal law. Benedict Arnold, for example, was regarded as a treasonous individual and was executed. But he didn't actually say anything about a trial, now that I think about it. Governor Perry didn't say anything about trying him for treason. He just said that if he came down to Texas after that, well, it might get ugly.
Treason is actually like a legal definition.
I believe that's correct. I don't believe that there is a statute against treachery, but on the other hand, we'll have to check the statutes. And with all this back and forth between Bachman and Perry, who have been going at it all week, we have not heard a great deal from the Mitt Man. Where's
the
Romney?
Mittman.
Where's Romney in all this?
Where's Romney? It's like, where's Waldo? You can look for the little sparkling teeth.
The hair's pretty impressive, too.
It's pretty impressive.
No, but look, isn't Romney doing the smart thing here? He's standing back, letting these new kids on the block tear at each other, and they're largely tearing at each other. There was a
Go ahead and make yourselves look insane, folks, and I'll come back in, ride in as the natural candidate in the end. I think you're right.
That's the traditional front runner, the guy whose turn it is, the businessman and acceptable conservative, whom the entire party, after all, in the end, could unite behind against Barack Obama. Of course they would, right? Wouldn't they?
Yeah.
I suppose there's a possibility that you might see a candidate who would emerge on the right to challenge Mitt Romney, possibly Ron Paul, possibly Michelle Bachman.
Let's talk about this Ron Paul thing for a second. This week, Jon Stewart of The Daily Show just beat Fox News and all the other networks, frankly, over the head for the fact that Ron Paul comes in number 2 in the Iowa straw poll and right behind Michelle Bachman within a couple hundred votes.
152 votes. 152
votes.
Less than 1%. Less than 1% separated them.
And everyone's talking about, Michelle Bachman. Oh, and look, Rick Santorum did okay. He did pretty well. And, Romney, he was down there even though he didn't campaign. People didn't even mention Ron Paul.
Well, some didn't. And many did just in passing. I do think we tried, and some other people in journalism tried, to get their arms around the phenomenon of how Ron Paul could have done so well, so far from his natural base in Texas and, so close to Michelle Bachman's natural base in Minnesota. And yet, Ron Paul is not a new story. Michelle Bachman is a new story.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Paul is not going to be on the cover of magazines, at least not magazines put out by people who want to sell those magazines. And he comes across as something of a crank on television. He's been around talking about the gold standard for a long time, and he just doesn't seem to generate the same kind of media interest that right now Michelle Bachman and then, of course, with the entry of Rick Perry, that new kid on the block, were generating.
He says things no one should say in the Republican Party, and that's what people seem to love about him. But the moment he goes any deeper into his positions, he becomes a different beast altogether because he has fairly extreme viewpoints.
Let's just say libertarian. Whether they're extreme or not, they're unusual in the Republican mix.
They're extremely libertarian. I mean, they're
legalizing drugs, bringing all the troops home, and I don't mean just from Iraq, but also from Afghanistan and South Korea and Europe,
everywhere.
And Japan, and
Getting rid of the education department altogether.
That may be extreme from some people's standpoint, but the education department is not really that old. Country got along without one for a long time. Ronald Reagan wasn't so sure about keeping it. So I don't know if he's extreme or if he's just really different from the other Republicans.
It's almost like an awesome rock song that's kind of rock, it's kind of country, it's kind of R&B. It doesn't fit in any genre, and so the radio stations don't know where to play it, and, it doesn't get all that airplay, and it just sort of makes the norms of this narrative. It crosses all these boundaries, and it makes it, you know, it makes it a little harder to cover him. I mean, Pawlenty, way down below Ron Paul, and Pawlenty's from next door in Minnesota.
And he got clobbered.
And he got clobbered
and didn't get anywhere near as much as Bachman or Paul. And really, I mean, the one thing you could say about him, nothing became his campaign like the leaving of it. The next morning, a lot of class, goes on TV, said, I thought maybe I'd fit the moment. I didn't. That's it. I'm out of here. It was clean. It was sensible. It was said in a way that was probably more charming than most of Tim Pawlenty's actual campaign, because he was always trying to snarl and show he could snarl with the tough guys, and that he wasn't really a moderate Minnesota kind of purple state kind of guy.
Yeah. It's funny. It's almost like McCain. It's like everything that everything the electorate liked about him, he had to run from in order to run in the Republican primary.
In 2011, in the summer of 2011, if you're not angry, if you're not outraged, if you're not the person banging the table, you're probably not going to get any attention. And the guy who makes that all possible, of course, for the Republicans, is the man in the White House. And, you know, like Mitt Romney, he hasn't been quite as prominent in responding to a lot of these attacks. Almost as though, in a way, you know, he's a little punched out at the moment, and he's just sort of playing what we used to call rope-a-dope, bouncing off the ropes of the ring and letting the other fighters exhaust themselves, beating him up.
Yeah. So he's out there on his bus tour doing his, you know, ice cream eating and so on, and his numbers, Ron, dipped below 40 for the first time. 40.
In the Gallup.
In the Gallup poll. And then his approval ratings on the economy, 26%.
That's pretty painful.
Of respondents, 20 approve of how he's handling the economy. That's hardcore. That's low.
We have to say Congress is not doing much better.
No, in fact, it's much worse. I think approval ratings in Congress most recently had been in the 13 to 18% range. They're, you know, down in the doldrums, of course. In fact, Ron, everyone I've talked to out here in the real world, notably Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, they're just, you know, what I hear more often than anything else is, what is wrong with those people? What is wrong with those people?
Well, let me throw out a theory that while the country says it wants compromise and why the country asks, what is wrong with all these jerks that are in Washington, who elects these people?
Yes,
they don't appoint
themselves.
They do not appoint themselves. They can't just show up here and fill out an application and be in Congress. They have to be elected by actual American voters.
You get what you vote for, and that's true. But increasingly what I hear people say, especially after this debt ceiling debate Congress went through and the president, is that they have to compromise. Even people who identify themselves as being in the Tea Party down here, I do not hear them saying that the politicians need to stand their ground and do what's right. I hear everyone saying that they have to compromise. Now, what they mean by that, whether they mean the other guys have to compromise with me or I have to compromise with them, you know, is always a question. But it seems like the approval ratings for the word compromise are up anyway down here.
Mm. So people say they should compromise, even if in some cases we suspect they may mean we want the other guys to knuckle under to our side. And
yes,
that's a compromise.
Yes.
Well, that's possible, too. Now, you as a congressional reporter have had occasion to meet and interview all or virtually all of this new super committee of 12. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I expect most people out in the country aren't talking too much about the Super Committee of 12.
No, they aren't.
But we will be talking about them all fall. And you know who these people are. You know Jeb Hensarling. You know the Democrats. Like
I know all of them.
Yeah. Okay, you know this entire group.
Pat Toomey was there, and Rob Portman were both in the House before they were in the Senate.
Okay, so in your years on the Hill, you've gotten to know these people. Is there the potential there for a 7-5 or an 8-4 vote in favor of some kind of package of deficit reduction that would include a real compromise?
I think so. I think the constituency for compromise is much stronger under Democrats. So I think that those six are very likely to come up with some kind of compromise and very likely to give away even core beliefs in an effort to getting something close to what the grand bargain does in the range of $4 trillion.
So you're talking about Medicare restraint,
some kind of
way of cutting back Medicare.
Now, you only need to pick off one more of the Republicans, and there's going to be a lot of pressure to hang together. But remember, as you know, Ron, that the other party is just the opposition. The real enemy is the Senate if you're a member of the House. And I think there is much, it's much more likely that they will pick off a Senate Republican.
Rob Portman.
Or two.
Rob Portman is the target I think a lot of people are looking at. Of course, that may mean that it's going to be impossible for Rob Portman to actually deliver that compromise vote. And do you think it would be possible to pass anything that this committee comes up with through the House if there isn't a single vote for it among the House Republicans? They are the majority party in the House. Why would they all vote for something that all three of their representatives had opposed?
It's a good question, and here's how. With all the Democrats. And I think you could then, having seen what's happened in the markets and the downgrade of the U.S. credit rating, there is a lot of pressure, especially people coming back from, you know, coming back from a break. There's a lot of pressure to actually do something and mitigate this terrible reputation they have now. I mean, I can't find a single person who doesn't know about what's going on in Congress.
That's surprising.
I know. That's
just the
that's
penetration
what gets me more
of the
than
consciousness
anything.
Of the nation is amazing.
And you know what it is? It's like the power of disgust is amazing. And people are disgusted with what's been going on in Washington. And, people tell me we have to clean house top to bottom. And I say, Republicans and Democrats, anybody, you know, Tea Party people, whatever. And he said, top to bottom. Top to bottom. We got to clean house. If we thought there was an anti-incumbent mood last time, I feel like there's just complete disgust this time.
I wonder if that's going to be translatable, though, in the sense of getting the candidates in place to run against some of these folks, getting some kind of anti-incumbency to express itself. Oh, still 13, 14 months away in November of 2012. It's very hard to get the energy of this summer to apply at that remove. We have no idea what may be coming down the road at us in the intervening months.
Yeah, of course, the Tea Party town halls were in 2009, a full year and a half before the election that was such a huge wave for the Republicans. But it seemed to me, and you would know better than I, it seemed like that was an anomaly, that things that are much closer to the election seem to affect the election.
Certainly, that's the pattern. Historically speaking, it's what happens in the actual election year, and particularly the months right before the election. Many times people don't pay attention, as the old cliche goes, until the World Series is over. Nowadays, of course, the World Series lasts into November, so that doesn't leave much of a electoral season after they finally put the bats and gloves away.
But with the disgust, Ron, it makes me wonder if the sort of adage about restaurants, like restaurants great, you might tell your friend, but if the restaurant's horrible, you're going to tell everybody you know. And I wonder if that could apply here with that deep sense of disgust that people have with Washington.
And do you hear anybody talking about the tendency that we all have in the media to go after sort of the weirdest personality that's out there in preference over the people who actually matter or the issues themselves? I'm thinking
I can't believe you're asking me that.
Christine,
that is just,
O'Donnell.
You know what? That's just rude. You're rude. I'm walking out. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Andrea, listen. Andrea, don't take that. Don't take that. Don't take it personally.
Bye.
I don't know if I've ever had that experience before.
I thought I was being quite charming.
I've actually had reporters walk out on me oftentimes, but not on the air. but seriously now, Christine.
We don't have to talk about her, do we? I mean,
well,
frankly,
but we have to talk about Piers Morgan.
Yeah, well.
Well, that's absolutely necessary.
I
thought
Morgan,
he was way out of line asking her about things that were in her book.
That were in her book and in her campaign and that
she'd
said publicly.
That is outrageous.
It truly is. It's rude is what it is.
The media have no... The next thing you know, they're going to be hacking our phones.
Well, he's a Brit.
Let me ask you this,
Actually, I'm not sure you can make that joke.
Were you not the first really serious journalist to go all the way out there to Delaware into the wilds and find Christine O'Donnell back before anyone was taking her seriously and interview her and bring her to NPR listeners?
Thank you very much, Ron. What I always think, though, is, I was one of the first people to do a series. In fact, I think I might have been the first person to do a real serious story about Christine O'Donnell. I sat down with her for an hour at a cafe and talked to her and went around with her and stuff. But what strikes me now is how little attention I paid at the time to Chris Coons, who is now a United States senator.
Because of Christine O'Donnell.
Because of Christine O'Donnell.
Because O'Donnell knocked off Mike Castle, who was cruising to that seat, and he would have given the Republicans one more seat in the Senate, brought them that much closer to majority control.
And at the time that I talked to Christine O'Donnell, the Republican Party in Delaware was still very sure that they were going to be able to keep Christine O'Donnell from knocking off Mike Castle.
They were in denial. Well, they didn't see the money coming.
They didn't see it. They just didn't see it.
And the money came from out of state, kind of at the last minute, carpet-bombed Mike Castle, and the next thing you know.
And, she's you know, Christine O'Donnell is also, if you sit down with her for any length of time, she's not your average candidate. It never seemed like she, if anyone was thinking rationally, they would pick her, frankly, to represent Delaware.
But they were voting against the time. That's right.
They were
voting against a lot of things, voting against Washington and Obama and health care and the health care legislation, of course. And they were voting against Mike Castle, who had voted for the health care bill.
Yeah.
And they were voting against him because he had been a Republican in name only to many activists on the right. And he had been a moderate in Delaware politics for decades.
It makes me wonder. I start to feel a little bit, especially out here where there are a lot of Republicans who do not like the Tea Party. It makes me wonder if the Tea Party is getting close to really damaging the Republican brand. Mm. It seems to me that there are an awful lot of centrist, moderate conservatives out in the real world, people who just want to run their businesses and they don't want the government so much on their back, but they're not running around like crazy. They're not running around with their hair on fire, who would like to have a party again that included the centrist, moderate, you know, moderate to conservative Republican. And, you know, I really wonder about that. At what point does the grass fire go out?
Hmm. Well, the primaries are coming, and they will be with us in another 6 months, and we will find out if Mitt Romney can hold on and win in some place like New Hampshire or maybe Nevada in the first four, maybe contend at least reasonably well in Iowa and South Carolina. Maybe then he goes on to the bigger states with a fair amount of momentum and proves the point that you've just been suggesting you've seen at work around the country. On the other hand, there is an enormous amount of mediagenic energy around these other candidates. You mentioned Ron Paul. We talked about Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann, and they seem to say a lot of things just for attention, but they are way up in the polls. The latest Rasmussen poll that came out this week, which a lot of Republicans pay a lot of attention to, it's a computerized poll. It's a robo-poll, but a lot of people think that they have the numbers, especially among Republicans. They had Rick Perry up at 29%, well ahead of Mitt Romney and Michelle Bachmann, and maybe that's just a flavor of the week, but there is a sense in which Rick Perry could bring together the economic and social issue portions of the Republican Party, and maybe we're not taking him seriously enough.
You know, I think what people are reacting to with him and Michelle Bachmann, it seems to me, is they both have a certain amount of swagger. It's different. His is Texas swagger, and hers is some other kind of swagger. But they are sure of themselves, sure to the point of being against the overwhelming science supporting global warming. They have this outsized, Texas-sized personalities, and people like that. People want a leader right now.
It's working right now, and we'll see how much longer it does. And maybe it works right on through 2012. But for today, that's it for this week's political podcast.
And you can follow It's All Politics and NPR Politics in general at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
I'm Andrea Seabrook.
Join us again next week when Ken Rudin will be back for It's All Politics from NPR. Thanks again, Andrea.
My pleasure.
Raven hair. Lips, sparks fly from her fingertips. Echoed voices in the night. She's a restless spirit on an endless flight. Ooh, ooh, witchy woman, see how she flies. Ooh, ooh, witchy.